From the ethics of the individual, we move along dark paths of duplicity to preparing the leaders of the future. And I say dark paths, as it's hard to see those without a self leading anything. But providing obedience without question, yes, we see that. Helping to incite others to accept and cement tightly in totalitarianism. Yes, we definitely see that. Continuing with Popper, the institution which, according to Plato, has to look after the future leaders can be described as the educational department of the state. It is, from a purely political point of view, by far the most important institution within Plato's society. It holds the keys to power. And that was from our June 15th, 2014 show. And our recent discussions and of power's need to reproduce itself intergenerationally and institutionalize its totalitarian vision shed light on why that is so. Continuing with Karl Popper, quote, why is it that Plato does not wish his leaders to have originality or initiative? The answer, I think, is clear. He hates change and doesn't want to see that readjustments may become necessary. But this explanation of Plato's attitude doesn't go deep enough. In fact, we're faced here with a fundamental difficulty of the leader principle. The very idea of selecting or educating future leaders is self-contradictory. You may solve the problem, perhaps, to some degree in the field of bodily excellence. Physical initiative and bodily courage are perhaps not so hard to ascertain. But the secret of intellectual excellence is the spirit of criticism. It is intellectual independence. And this leads to difficulties which must prove insurmountable for any kind of authoritarianism. The authoritarian will in general select those who obey, who believe, who respond to his influence. But in doing so, he is bound to select mediocrities, for he excludes those who revolt, who doubt, who dare to resist his influence. Of course, the authorities will always remain convinced of their ability to detect initiative, but what they mean by this is only a quick grasp of their intentions. And they will remain forever incapable of seeing the difference. And a quick comment on this. I'm hoping we'll think a little bit more about what he just said and consider the possibility that what he just said is in fact an indictment of the whole notion of rule of the state, because it requires obedience, deference to its will. It creates an educational system. An educational system that fosters obedience. So I want to think more about that, because Karl Popper never went so far as to say that rule itself is the problem. Continuing, we are led here, I believe, says Karl Popper, to a result of some importance and to one which can be generalized. Institutions for the selection of the outstanding can hardly be devised. And doesn't every state do this? You see what I'm getting at here? Continuing, institutional selection may work quite well for such purposes as Plato has in mind, for arresting change, but it will never work well if we demand more than that, for it will always tend to eliminate initiative and originality and, more generally, qualities which are unusual and unexpected. This is not a criticism of political institutionalism, he says. It only reaffirms what has been said before, that we should always prepare for the worst leaders. And although we should try, of course, to get the best, I'm arguing we need to move on beyond the limitations of the class system. Continuing. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering how an education system that produces toadies is also supposed to produce il duce, Plato explains it, propping up his invented Socrates to make the crap go down easy. Plato explains it as a selection or an anointment even, of someone recognized for his excellence in dialectics, another word for which might be heartlessness, as well as in politics, ditto. Quote, unless, says Socrates, and this is in fact a quote from the Republic, unless, says Socrates, unless in their cities, and this is not the historical Socrates, this is the device that play, and this has been an ongoing device of power over the years, to take those who it is threatened by and put words in their mouths or proclaim a provenance to them which is untrue, or try to discredit them by calling them, like what they've done with Emily Dickinson, as not being fully, you know, in possession of all her faculties or whatever, you know? What do they do with Shakespeare? Say, oh, he wasn't really from the midst of we commoners. Oh, no, he was an aristocrat. You know what I'm saying? It's like they have to lie because they are sculpting a false reality for us to live in which we look at them in awe. And that they have to shape reality. They have to shape the facts to fit that reality and try to shape our belief system to fit that reality. So this is not the real Socrates that actually existed. This is the fictional device of Plato. Unless, says Socrates, in their cities, philosophers are vested with the might of kings, or those now called kings and oligarchs become genuine and fully qualified philosophers, and unless these two, political might and philosophy, are fused, there can be no rest, and the evil will not cease to be rampant in the cities, nor, I believe, in the race of man, unquote, from Plato. That's Popper quoting Plato, his Republic, 473 C2E, to which Popper appends the note, quote, note the opposition between divine rest and the evil, i.e. change, in the form of corruption or degeneration. It has been said, says Karl Popper, only too truly, that Plato was the inventor of both our secondary schools and our universities. I don't know a better argument for an optimistic view of mankind, no better proof of their indestructible love for truth and decency, of their originality and stubbornness and health, than the fact that this devastating system of education has not utterly ruined them. And that's Karl Popper, The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 1, The Spell of Plato. And he's being very modest here, because it's only due to folks like himself that that's the case.